We're holding on to Zion Omer Aleph, the fifth line. We went through the last couple of days how we know that an Eved Ivri or Omer Ivriya can be acquired with Kesef, and now the Mishnah had mentioned they can be acquired with Kesef or with Shtar. So now we need to deal with. So we figured out how we know Kesef. We had the whole discussion about the various kinds of Eved Ivri. So now we come to Shtar, and we need to discuss how we know that that works in order to acquire an Eved or an Eved Ivri or an Omer Ivri. So the Gemara says, but over Shtar Minolan. So where do we know that from? Omer Ola, do Omer Ola, Omer Kra im Acheres Yikachloi. So the Torah tells us in connection with an Omer Ivriya. First, it describes how you how it talks about the concept of Omer Ivriya. Then it mentions then it mentions so that it mentions the concept of Yiyud, which we're going to talk about in the next couple of which we're going to talk about in a couple of blat about the concept that the master himself or his son can marry the Omer Ivriya, and the money that was used to pay for her to begin with becomes the Kesef Kiddushin. But then the pasuk continues, Im Acheres Yikachloi, if that person, if the master or his son, takes himself another wife. So in context, the pasuk is saying that he has to make sure he's not allowed to diminish her rights. He can't say, well, the other one is the primary wife and you're only like a pilegish or something. No, he has to treat her co-equal with the other wife. But the point is, the Torah says, if he takes himself another wife, so therefore he kisha hakosav la'acheres. In that way, then the Torah is comparing the Omer Ivriya to an acheres, to another woman whom the other might marry. And therefore, ma acheres mekanya b'shtar. So just like the acheres, just like a regular wife, can be acquired with a shtar, as we learned earlier in our perek, that in turn that in turn we learn from a hekesh, from the fact that since as the yotz of a hoysa, so since a shtar takes her out of a marriage, then a shtar can bring her into it. Af omer hevriya miknia b'shtar. Therefore, we learn from that that the omer hevriya can be bought to begin with using a shtar. Then in turn we have then in turn we now we learned the last couple of days we said there is an we said as far as the Eved Ivri there's a hekesh between him and an Omer Ivriya because you have a different pasuk that says Ho Ivri Oy Ho Ivriya, so that covers the case of the Eved Ivri. Within the Eved Ivri himself, we talked about you have the different cases where he sold where he's sold by Beis Din versus where he sells himself. So then you have how we include all of those. So now in the previous sugya, we ended up we discussed the question: does everybody agree that there is a gzeira shava between the different kind between the eved sold by Beis Din and the eved sold who sold himself? So we said in the end it seems on the face of it like everybody accepts that gzeira shava, in which case then we've covered all the different kinds of avadim. On the other hand, on the other hand, we've shown him talk about, as we learned yesterday, there is the possibility maybe there is some Tana who doesn't learn that and who doesn't learn that gzeira shava, and in that case then he would have to learn the mocher atzma in a different way. But in any case, we start with the Omer Ivriya and we go from there. But the Gemara says, "Hanichal that works according to the opinion that says that if you're going to acquire an Omer Ivriya with a shtar, who is it that writes the shtar? It's the master who writes it, the one who's buying it. So in that case, the same way as a shtar kedushin earlier in the perek, it talked about that the shtar kedushin is written by the husband. He's the one who writes out on a piece of paper or what have you, hareat mekudeshesli." So now, if the Odin writes the shtar to acquire an Omer Ivriya, then it's the same parallel kind of thing. El under Omer Av Kosvei, but you have an opinion, as the Gemara is going to now bring the Machlokas about it, that no, it's the father who writes the shtar, the father being the one who's selling his daughter as an Omer Ivriya. So in that case, it's not like shtar kedushin because by shtar kedushin you don't have the father writing on behalf of his daughter. Just the opposite, you have the father receiving that shtar on behalf of his daughter. So then, my ikar meimar, according to that opinion, what are you going to say? How are you going to learn? How are you going to learn the concept of acquiring an Omer Ivriya with a shtar? De itmar, as in fact we have a machlokas about that shtar Omer Ivriya. me koisvoy, who is it that writes that shtar? It doesn't mean, by the way, that he himself has to write it, the same way as with a get, where we said b'chosav law, and we learned gittin, doesn't necessarily mean the husband himself has to write it. He, or we said takonas chachamim, is that she, the wife, pays a sofer to write it. The point is, in other words, who's responsible for seeing that it's written. So Rav Huna Omer Odin Kosvoy, Rav Chista Omer Av Kosvoy. Rav Huna says that the master is the one who writes it. So he would write a shtar that would say something to the effect that I am acquiring your daughter as a shifchuk, as an Omer Hevriya. And Rav Chista says Av Kosvoy, the father writes it, and he writes, I am selling my daughter, I'm giving my daughter to you as an Omer Hevriya. So Hanichal Rav Huna. So then it works out according to Rav Huna, because again, according to Rav Huna, the shtar to acquire an Omer Hevriya is exactly parallel to the shtar to acquire an isha. Elol Rav Chista Ma'ikar Neimer, but according to Rav Chista, what are you going to say? According to him, how you learn? You can't learn the shtar of an Omer Hevriya from the shtar of Kiddushin, because according to him, they're written by different parties to the transaction. So according to him, where you're learning Bechlal, the shtar works. And the answer is Omer Abacha Bayakov, Omer Kra, fine. But you have a different pasuk, a couple of psukim earlier regarding the Omer Hevriya. It says, Loi Seitze Ketseis HaAvodim. She does not go out the way that Avodim go out. Implying, in other words, as we're gonna talk about later on, it means, in other words, we know we're gonna talk about in a few blocks when we get to the dinim of avodim knanim. We know you have the famous concept of shein va'ayim with an eved knani. If you knock out his eye or his tooth or any one of 24 certain roshei avodim, then he goes free. So we're saying an Omer Hevriya does not go free with that. If the master injures her eye or tooth or what have you, he just pays her the usual nezek tsar, etc. for that, but she doesn't go free. So therefore, though, the implication is also, since it's saying lois seitzik, it says ha'avodim, she doesn't go out like the way that avodim do, implying avol niknesi b'kinyan avodim. But the implication is she can come in and be acquired like the way avodim are acquired, umay nihu shtar. Namely, what would that be needed to say as far as shtar? We don't need it for kesef, because kesef we already had a different pasuk, so therefore it must be referring to shtar. In turn, in Eved Knani, we're going to learn later on in the parak, because an Eved Knani is similar to Karka, and Karka can be acquired with a shtar. Therefore, so can an Omer Hevriya. Therefore, so can an Eved Knani. And since the pasuk is saying that since the pasuk is implying that an Omer Hevriya is acquired in a way similar to an Eved Knani, then there you go. According to Rav Chista, there's your shtar. So the Gemara says, "Ve'ema avol niknesi kekinin avodim u'mayuniu chazaka." Why say that? Maybe another way we're going to learn later on in the perek that an eved knani can be acquired in three ways: kesef, shtar, chazaka. So kesef, fine. We don't need a ribui from the pasuk because we already know it. As we learned in the previous sugya, shtar was saying over here, but there's also chazaka, that you can acquire an eved just by doing chazaka on him. For example, by having him do work for you, and that's enough to complete the kinyan. So maybe by an Omer Hevriya the same thing. The answer is no. Omer Kra, no, because by an eved knani, where do we learn that an eved knani can be acquired with chazaka? Omer Kra. The pasuk says that you will bequeath your avodim knanim to your children. In fact, that's the pasuk from which we learn. So from that, the v'isnachaltem means treat them like a nachla, like an inheritance of property. So therefore, in other words, that in the same way as property, the same way as karka can be acquired with chazaka, so can an eved knani. So therefore, but when it says oisam, v'isnachaltem oisam levneichem acharechem, means oisam b'chazaka, only them, avodim knanim, can be acquired with chazaka, v'loi acher b'chazaka, but not anybody else. Nobody else can be acquired with chazaka. So therefore, that excludes the Omer Hevriya from being acquired with chazaka. So therefore, that leaves us only kesef and shtar. And kesef, we already have the pasuk behefka to tell us that that works. So therefore, it must be that if we have a ribuy in the pasuk, a hint in the pasuk to tell us she has to be similar to avodim knanim, then it must be referring to shtar. Okay. The Gemara says, "Ve'ema oisam b'shtar v'lay acha b'shtar." Maybe the other way around. If we have the word oisam by avodim knanim, so what are we saying? We have three ways of acquiring avodim knanim: kesef, shtar, and chazak. So we're saying when it comes to an amah hevriya, we want to argue that only two of those work. Now kesef, fine, is out of the picture because we know that works because of a hefta. We have between shtar and chazak, only one of those is going to apply to an amah hevriya. So you're telling me shtar applies because, let's say, to ketes avodim, because you have a ribui there, that she's like avodim in that sense. And on the other hand, chazaka doesn't work because of the word oisam. Maybe the other way around. Maybe oisam, maybe the miut of oisam means you can't acquire her with a shtar the way that you acquire an eved knani, but the lo say to ketes avodim means you can acquire her with chazaka the way that you acquire an eved knani. So ve'ema oisam b'shtar v'lay acha b'shtar. So maybe say that the oisam is a miut, and it means that only avodim knanim can be acquired with a shtar, but not an omah hevriya. And the answer is no, hoksiv, because lo say to ketes avodim. Again, you have a posik that says that implies that she does get acquired like an eved knani. Well, the Gemara says a mora isa. Well, then what makes you see it logically in this way to say that we should apply that the ribui should apply to shtar and the miut should apply to chazaka rather than the other way around? So the Gemara answers, mistaber shtar havalayla nabuye. It's more logical to include shtar and say that an omah hevriya can be acquired with a shtar shekein moitzi b'bas yisrael, because after all, we find that a shtar is powerful as far as taking her out from her husband, that a get is a shtar after all. So we see therefore that it has a power that chazaka doesn't. In fact, Tosfos points out that it works for kedushin as well. But the fact is, the pasuk says more explicitly that it works as a get, because that's what a get is. V'chosav v'aseh v'krisus. The fact that it works for kedushin, we learn only from a hekesh. On top of that. So therefore, the Gemara prefers to mention the point that it's moitzi, where it says clearly in the pasuk, rather than machnis, where we have to use a limud for that. So the Gemara says, adrabba, chazaka havalin rabuya shekin konim nichse ager. You could argue the other way around. Maybe on the contrary, chazaka is a more powerful thing because it allows you to acquire the property of a ger when you have, and we've learned this before, if a ger tzedek passes away without children, then he doesn't have any heirs, because his birth family are goyim, they're not considered related to him in halacha anymore. His wife doesn't yaushin him according to halacha, and his children he doesn't have any. So then, therefore, his property is available for any yid for the taking. And what's a way that another yid can acquire that property is chazaka. He can't acquire the shtar. If a person were to write out a shtar saying, I am acquiring all these nichse ager, nothing happens, only if he does chazaka on the actual property. So then therefore we see chazaka has a strength that shtar doesn't. And the answer is fine, but the ishus mi alay ashkachan, fine, but we're relative to ishus, relative to acquiring a wife, we never find that chazaka has a power over a shtar. We only find a shtar having a power over chazaka. Now, with that said, I mean, so the Tosfos Rid argues, what's that doing in the Gemara over here? The fact is, we're not talking about issues. We're talking about acquiring. We're talking about acquiring an omah hevriya. So what kind of answer? What kind of answer is that? But the Ritva says that what it means is that we're talking about the fact is, what the Gemara is out to show is that even in an area of halacha such as ishus, where chazaka doesn't work, shtar does work. As opposed to, now it's true, the specific case of nichse ager, you have chazaka works where shtar doesn't, but in general, as far as acquiring property, shtar will work. and chazaka will work. So therefore, you don't really have any area of halacha where a chazaka will work and shtar will not, only in the one specific case, whereas you have an entire area of halacha, namely ishus, where it's the other way around. Then there's also an explanation, actually, that the fact is that when you acquire an amah ivriya, there's a certain aspect of ishus in it as well, because afterwards you can do yield with that, where you can do yield, so therefore we can learn it from ishus. So that's one way of saying, therefore, how we know that the ribui leiseta katzeis ha'avodim is going to include shtar versus the miut of this nachaltim oisim is going to exclude chazaka. Iboyseima, or the Gemara continues, another way you could say lahochiyahani imacheres. The fact is, it's not just that you have the leiseta katzeis ha'avodim. Earlier we said we also have a limud from imacheres yikachloi, that you have an equation between the omah hevriya and a regular wife, and so we said just like a regular wife you can acquire with a shtar, so too an omah hevriya. Now we're talking within Rav Chista's opinion over here, where Rav Chista had said the two shtaris are not identical because a shtar kedushin is written by the husband, whereas here a shtar of omah hevriya, Rav Chista holds, is written by the father. Nevertheless, though, even Rav Chista is going to agree that the pasuk imacheres yikachloi is still making a certain equation between the omah hevriya and a regular wife. So not, he would say, to the extent of who writes the shtar, but at least to the extent of that a shtar should work altogether. So therefore, in other words, according to him, you have three different things. You have imacheres yikachloi, which teaches us something, which teaches us that there's a general concept of a shtar. You have loiseta katzeis ha'avodim, which teaches us specifically that a shtar is a valid method of acquiring her. And you have these nachaltim oisim, which tells us, but not chazaka. So if you only had the last two, then yes, conceivably you could say the other way around, say that chazaka works, shtar doesn't. But once you have also, imacheres yikachloi, so that strengthens the position of shtar and says that if you're going to have a choice between the two of them, then you're going to say among the two possibilities, shtar and chazaka, that it's going to be a shtar. Okay, so that takes care of Rav Chista. Now, what about Rav Huna? Now, according to Rav Huna, he learns exclusively from imacheres yikachloi, and he holds there's an absolute equation between the two shtaris, because in both cases, the one who acquires is the one who writes the shtar. The husband acquires the wife and writes the shtar, kiddushin, and says hareat mekudeshesli, and the odin is acquiring the omah hevriya and writes the shtar and says bitcho knuyali or whatever. So according to him, hi loiseta katzeis ha'avodim my dorishbe. So what does he do with the pasuk loiseta katzeis ha'avodim? So the answer is ha'umi boile she'ina yotze b'rosh ha'avodim ke'evin. That means what we said before, that she doesn't go free. That she doesn't go free with rosh ha'avodim the way an eved kanani would. An eved kanani again goes free if you knock out his eye or tooth or what have you. And omah hevriya does not. So in other words, Rav Chista was saying that you do learn that from this pasuk, but in addition, you also have it's implying that only as far as leaving his service is she not like a vodim planim, but coming in is different. Rav Huna is not learning it that way. He's saying the pasuk is just telling us that din, just legufay, not to be medayik from it, that she can be acquired like an eved. In other words, it actually says when you have a pasuk that's needed legufay, that's needed just to teach us the halacha itself, then you can't also be medayik from it something else. So since over here we need it, because otherwise we would have thought that if an eved kanani goes free b'rosh ha'avodim, maybe so does an omah hevriya, and therefore we need the pasuk to tell us that not. So therefore the pasuk is telling us strictly that it's not meant for us to be medayik anything else from it. Rav Chista, so what would Rav Chista answer to that? He says imken lichtav kro loiseta ka'avodim. Fine, but in that case the pasuk could have said she doesn't go out like avodim. My ketseis ha'avodim. Instead, the pasuk says she doesn't go out like the going out of avodim. So he says shmamina tauti. Therefore, you can learn both things from it. Both the fact legufay that she doesn't go free with rosh avodim, as well as the diuk that as well as the diuk that her going out is not like avodim, but her coming in to become an omer ibriya is similar to avodim in that can be done with a shtar. Whereas Rav Huna apparently is saying that that's not really a significant difference. It's saying lo seitzik atzeis avodim. It could have said lo seitzik avodim. It's not a significant enough difference to darshan anything else from it. Okay. So that's that. So that's how we know that. So that's how we know that you can acquire an omer ivriya with a shtar. And once we know an omer ivriya, then we know an eved ivri from it by various hakeshim and gzeda strums. Okay. Now we said in the Mishnah, the koines atzma b'shanim. In turn, an eved ivri reacquires himself, meaning goes free from his master. One way is b'shanim, when years have passed, the 6 years. And that is dichtiv, sheish shanim yavad v'ashvias v'gem. The pasuk says he works for 6 years. In the seventh year, he goes free. So there. So that's one way that he goes free is automatically after 6 years. Then the Mishnah had continued b'yovel. Another way is if yovel comes. And that would be dichtiv, shnase yovel, yavad imach, because the pasuk says he works with you until yovel. We learned in the earlier sugya yesterday, that there's different psukim that talk about when an eved ivri goes free in yovel, and we talked about why exactly we need all of them, why we need to be told by machru beis din and by moicher atzmai and by nirtza, and we need to be told also the case when yovel came out only a couple of years after he was sold. In all those cases, the bottom line is that it does work, and therefore yovel is one of the ways in which an eved ivri or amo ivriya goes free. Then we said in the Mishnah, another one is Giren Kesef. Another one is Begiren Kesef by deducting from the value. As we learned the last couple of days, he was sold for X amount. So now we deduct the number of years that have been worked so far, and then he pays for the rest. So say, for example, we said he was sold for 6 mana. And he was so far worked for 2 years. So there's another 4 years to go. So therefore, now he has to pay only 4 mana. So how do we know that? So Omar Chizkiya, the Omar Krov, a hefta. So Chizkiya says, and we learned this the other day, because the pasuk says by an Omar Hevriya, the hefta, he should make her be redeemed. And that means v'lamed shemagareya mepidyonu v'yotze. That teaches us that shemagareya pidyonu v'yotze, that he deducts from her redemption value and lets her go free. He says that, in other words, that we deduct. Let's figure out how many years has she worked for me so far, and we'll deduct that. And you won't have to pay me back that. And therefore, so that in that way, he's assisting with her redemption. We learned yesterday or the day before that it means even if her value has gone up since then, because she's older, she's developed more skills and talents, etc., still we go according to the original purchase price. So all of that is behefta. He makes her be redeemed. In other words, he's assisting in that by foregoing that amount of money. Okay. So those are all ways in which an eved ivri or omer ivriya can acquire themselves, can go free. So Tana, now we learn in a Braisa, when we say that he can acquire himself with Kesef, the koine asatzma, the Kesef of a Shava Kesef. In addition, he can also reacquire himself and go free by paying money or Shava Kesef, over Shtar, as well as with a Shtar. So let's figure it out. B'shlema Kesef, dichtiv, I understand how we know that he can free himself by paying kesef, by paying actual money, because the pasuk says mikesef miknasa. In the case of an eved ivri sold to a goy, it says that it mentions kesef miknasa, the money that was paid for him. And now it says he goes and pays back that money, and then he goes free. So we understand, therefore, that money itself works. Shava kesef. We understand that also Shava Kesef, any other valuables that are the equivalent of money also work, because and doesn't mean valuables, actually. The Gemara elsewhere explains that even Subin, even Bran, for example, as long as you have enough of it to equal the value, is still called Shava Kesef. The Gemara in Bava Kama explains that all kinds of metaltalin are called Metav, they're called the best, in the sense that you may not find anybody to buy it over here, but you can always take it someplace else and sell it over there, as opposed to Karka, where you can't do that because you can't transport it. So there you have a difference between Meitav and not. Anyway, the point is that when it comes to Shava Kesef, also Yoshiv Gulase, Amar Achmana, the Pasuk goes on to say he will return
his geula. He will return the what he's using for his redemption. So also now the word yoshiv is extra. So therefore, l'rabbis shava kesef kesef. So it comes to teach us that you can use shava kesef instead. You don't have to pay in money. You can also pay with other objects that equal that value. Ela hai shtar hechidami, but you're saying that an Eved Ivri can go free with a shtar, which was not mentioned in the Mishnah. So we have to figure out what kind of shtar, hechidami. What's the scenario? Ilema de kosev shtara adami. Do we mean that he's saying, I don't have the money right now, but I'll write you out a shtar and I'll owe you the money? So you don't need a separate pasuk for that. Which, by the way, Rishonim point out, the Rashba and other Rishonim point out, you would have to have, to that extent, you would have to have the Odin agree to it. It's one thing if you're giving him Kesef or Shavar Kesef, then you could do it even against the Odin's will, because you can tell him, look, at least you're getting something of value in return. But when it's just a shtar, it's just a piece of paper, he has to be willing to agree to accept that. Anyway. So if you're talking about that you wrote him a shtar chayv, you say, look, I should have had to pay you $1,000 for my freedom. So instead, I'll write you out a shtar and I'll owe you $1,000. Well, hainu kesef. So why do we need a separate limud for that? Isn't that effectively the same thing as kesef? Now, to be sure, shtar is not always the equivalent. A shtar is not really always the equivalent of kesef. But the fact is, the Rashba points out, I mean, we know, for example, if a person wants to be Mekadosh with money and he writes out a shtar, that certainly doesn't work. But he explains that the Gemara is going to go through over here and talk about the idea that there's a special kinyan on the Eved Ivri, a kinyan aguf, more than what a husband has on his wife. So therefore, to that extent, therefore, the Gemara is going to end up saying that a shtar doesn't work. But right now, we don't know that yet. So right now, the Gemara assumes that that the shtar is the equivalent of kesef in the sense that you're just saying that I'll owe you this money. So ela shichru. Evidently, we have to be talking about a shtar shichru, where the master writes out to the slave and he says, I don't need you anymore. You're free to go. Well, the question in that case, shtar lomali. If he wants to let him go free, why would he have to write a shtar b'chlal? Lemale ba'apet tre zil. All he has to do is tell him in front of two edim, go away. Strictly speaking, he may not even need edim, but in case later on he wants to deny it, then the edim will back up the eved. Inami ba'apet bedina. Or he could tell zil. Or he could tell him in the presence of beis din. In other words, if it's just a choiv, if it's just a regular monetary debt, then all he has to do is be meichel it. So why would he need to, in addition, write out a shtar? Tosfos actually points out that in that case, then why would he even need to tell him in front of two people, go, I don't need you anymore? The Gemara could have just as well asked. He could be mafkir him. After all, we learned in Gittin that you can be mafkir and Eved Knani. We had a machloikas over there whether you need a get shichur, but the only reason we said, according to the opinion, that you need a get shichur, which was Shmuel's opinion over there, actually Rav's opinion, Shmuel had said you don't need a get shichur, Rav had said you do, but that was only because otherwise he's still going to be also to marry a Bas Yisrael. Here, that's not an issue. So Tosfos says you're right. Actually, he could tell him to go hefker as well. He could tell him hefker, but the point is that what the Gemara is asking is if he's gonna free him with a shtar, whatever he's gonna write in the shtar, hareata ben choren or whatever, he could tell him verbally. So why do we need to? So why do we even need a shtar at all? And the answer is. Omar Rabba Zoise Meres Eved Ivri Gufay Konri. From this you learn that an Eved Ivri's body is actually acquired by his master. Now, not in the sense of an Eved Knani, because after all, he's not necessarily equal to an he's obviously not equal to an Eved Knani in this connection. And in fact, there are Rishonim discuss the question what it means that what we mean by Kinyan Gufay. Do we mean that for example, where you have, let's say, for example, you can own a tree, you can sell somebody a tree, not that you own the tree itself, but that you own the payrus of the tree. So here, maybe are we talking about the same kind of thing that you own the Eved Ivri to the extent where you're entitled to all his Maisi Adayim. So that's one way of understanding the Shita Lenoid Lami and Meiri understand it that way. On the other hand, the Ramban and a few other Mefoshim explain that the same way as by an Eved Knani, we learned in Gittin, there's two kinds of kinyan you have on him, a kinyan mamon, namely that he's a monetary asset, and also a kinyan isur, that he's also to marry a Bas Yisrael, the same way. By the Eved Ivri, they learn that there's a kinyan isur on him as well, not an isur, but on the contrary, a heter that you have by him, that you don't have by anybody else, namely that he can be with a Shifcha Knanis, as we learned yesterday. Anyway, the point is, Rava is saying you shouldn't think that the ownership of an Eved Ivri is strictly a monetary thing, and therefore you could just be moichel it like you moichel any other debt. No, there has to be a shtar in order to take away that gufoy konoi. If the master wants to forgive that giroin, that deduction of money, he can't do it unless he writes out a shtar. So if he's going to free him with a shtar, so even though he's writing in the shtar the exact same words that he would have said verbally, harayata ben chorin, or what have you, nevertheless, he has to write it out in a shtar in order to remove that kinyan aguf. And according to some rishonim, that kinyan aguf is a kinyan isur that shtar makes it official. He can no longer be with a shifcha knanis. So those are other methods by which an Eved Ivri or Omer Hevriya can be freed. The Mishnah didn't mention those. Fine. One point that Mefor should make is that maybe the Mishnah is listing only ones that can be done with or without the consent of the Odin. He goes free after 6 years, whether the Odin likes it or not. He goes free in Yovel, whether the Odin likes it or not, and so forth, as opposed to a Shtar where we said that the Odin has to consent. Okay, now we said in the Mishnah, Yisera all of Omer Hevriya. We said an Omer Hevriya has an additional method over an Eved Ivri by which she goes free, namely when she develops Simonim, when she develops Shtei Sairis. So an Eved Ivri is going to be an older person who's sold. You have either he sells himself or he's sold by Beis Din, but either way, he's already after Bar Mitzvah and he's already developed Shtei Sairis. And Omer Hevriya is sold by her father when she's little. And therefore, once she develops Shtei Sairis, then she goes free, even if it's within 6 years, and even if it's before Yovel. So the Gemara says, Omer Shlokish, Omer Hevriya Koines Atzma B'Mises Ha'av. Here's another way in which an Omer Hevriya would reacquire herself and go free, is if her father dies during the time that she's working for this other guy. And Rish Shlokish says, Mikava Choymer, Koines Atzma B'Mises Ha'av Mirishus Odrein, from the ownership of the Odin, and Rish Lakish says mikavah chomer. You can make a kavah chomer from the simonim. You figure like this: Uma simonim she'en metzien mirshus av. Madach simonim don't take away a daughter from the rishus of her father, because even once she develops simonim, which makes her a naira, she's still under the rishus of her father until she becomes a begeres. Which is another 6 months. So simonim don't take her out of the reshus of her father, mutzien mirshus odin, yet they take her out of the reshus of the master. So then, misa shemetzien mirshus ab, death, when her father dies, which takes her out of his reshus, and nobody else has that kind of reshus over her anymore. Which Rashi brings, in other words, for example, let's say her Maisi Adeha would no longer belong to the Yoshim. Rashi refers to a Gemara that we learned in Ksubas that says that even though she's being supported by her brothers, nevertheless she keeps her own Maisi Adeha. And we learn that from a pasuk. So we see that the death of the father takes her out of his Rashus. Ein Adin Shemetziah Mirshus Adin. Shouldn't it be a Kavachomer then that it takes her out of the Rashus of the Odin? So Rish Lakish would say that's another way in which an Omer Hevriya goes free. But the Gemara says, Mesvi Rav Hoshiya, or Mosi Rav Hoshiya, really it's supposed to be. Rav Hoshiya points out a contradiction. Our Mishnah had said, Yiseira all of Omer Hevriya, and an Omer Hevriya has an additional thing over an Eved Ivri, Shekhoine Asatim V'Simonim, that she reacquires herself with Simonim. Now, the Im Issa, if you're going to tell me what you, Rish Lakish, are saying, that to also Mrs. Av works, Nisni Nami Mrs. Av, then the Mishnah should mention that as well. So the Gemara says that's not a problem. Tana v'shayo. You could say the Tana listed certain things, but he left out other ones. The Tana, when he gives a list of things, it's not always an exhaustive list. Tosfos, by the way, points out that you could say on the opposite chuppah, you would say once she goes into the chuppah, she's out of the reshus of her father, but it doesn't take her out of the reshus of the Odin. And Tosfos says, fine, but the difference is chuppah requires the das of the av, so therefore you could say that it won't work for the Odin, because otherwise who's ever going to buy an Amah Evriya? The moment he buys her, the father could bring her into the chuppah, and that would be that, so therefore it's logical chuppah doesn't work. But Misa Sa'av doesn't involve his das, so therefore we could say it does work. Nobody's going to avoid buying an Amah Evriya because the father might die, because that's not a common enough situation. Anyway, So we're answering Tana v'Shayer. You could say when the Mishnah gives a list, it's not always exhaustive. Sometimes the Mishnah gives a list and leaves out some units in the list, some individual items in the list. The Gemara says though, my Shire to high Shire. You always have to ask though, what else did he leave out? That you can say he left this out. If he left out two or more things, then you can say fine, he just didn't bother to list all of them. But if he leaves out only one, then you can't say that. So the Gemara says, okay, Shire misses Odin. Fine, you can say that he left out the case where the Odin dies, where also the Amah Evriya goes free. As the Gemara is going to explain later on, we'll learn on Yud Zayin Amud Beis. The Gemara says, no. E mishum misses Odin, lav shiurahu. No, if you're going to say that the Mishnah is leaving out misses Odin, where it could have mentioned and it didn't, that's not something that's in the same category as the other things of the Mishnah. Because after all, that applies to a man as well. Namely, now what we mean is, we're going to learn later on that with an Eved Ivri, the death of the Odin doesn't always free him, in the sense, we learned this briefly before, that if the Odin has a son, then the Eved Ivri continues working for him, as opposed to an Amah Ivri or not. Still, though, the point is, the Rashba explains what we're saying over here is that Misa Sa'odin, freeing the person, applies to some Avodim Ivriim in the sense, it depends whether the Odin had sons or not. If the Odin had only daughters or only other Yoshim, then the Eved Ivri does go free. So therefore, the concept of going free by Mrs. Odin does apply to a husband, does apply to an Eved Ivri as well, and therefore you can't say, in other words, the argument is that there are three ways for an Amah Ivriya to go free. One that it said in the more than an Eved Ivri, Simonim, and now Rish Lakish is arguing also Mrs. Sa'av, and then Mrs. Sa'odin. What we're saying, Mrs. Sa'odin is not something that an Amah Ivriya has over an Eved Ivri, because there are cases where Mrs. Sa'odin frees the Eved Ivri as well. Some yes, some not, depending on whether the Odin died without sons, and also, as we're going to learn later on, depending whether the Eved Ivri was nirtza, depending whether his ear was pierced, where once his ear was pierced, then Taki doesn't continue working for a son either. But at least in some cases of an Eved Ivri, he goes free with Misasa Odin as well, so therefore the Mishnah couldn't have listed that as an advantage of the Amah Ivriya over the Eved Ivri. So the Ikanami Be'ish, it applies also to a man, or at least to some cases with a man, therefore loy katani, so therefore it didn't mention it. So you still, according to Rish Lakish though, you have only two ways in which an Amah Ivriya can go free where an Eved Ivri can't. Simonim and Mrs. Arden, and therefore, or Mrs. Av, Simonim and Mrs. Av, and therefore the Mishnah should have listed both of them. If it's listing only one, then that implies maybe that the other one doesn't apply. So the Gemara says, well, then you're right. So then the question would be, according to the Shlokish for Elam Nisni, so then according to the Shlokish, it should mention Mrs. Av. And the answer is no. There was a different reason why it didn't mention it. Tana Dover Sheyeshle Kitzva Katani. Because the Tana maybe only wants to list things that have a kitzva, that have a fixed time when they're going to happen. Kesef Miknose, to pay money, to reacquire them, you know, it's not a fixed time, but at least you know when there's a certain amount of money. You can plan it in advance, kind of. Sheishonim and Yovel, you know when those are going to come. As opposed to Davisha and Lekitzvah, like Katani, arguably the Mishnah is not listing things where you never know when they could happen. So the father dying, you never know when that could happen, so therefore maybe that's a reason for the Mishnah not to mention it. So the Gemara says, well, Simonim de Inlam Kitzvah B'Katani. What about Simonim? There's no particular time when Simonim could come either. They could develop any time, and yet it does mention it. And the answer is Amar Psafra, Inlam Kitzvah Maila, or Yeshlam Kitzvah Mata. It's true, there's no latest time that they could come, but there is an earliest time that they could come. There's a time before which, if Shtei Cyrus develop, they have no effect. The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa. Ben Teisha Shonim Shehevi Shtei Cyrus, a boy who is 9 years old or older, who develops Shtei Cyrus, Shuma, we don't consider that that's simonim that now he's considered an adult. We say it's considered just like a wart that developed hair and it has no effect in halacha. If he develops them between age 9 and 12, and then they're still on him when he reaches 12, shuma, then also they're still considered a shuma. On the other hand, there, Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda Oma Simon. Rabbi Yosi ben Yehuda disagrees and says in that case, they can be considered a simon, even though they developed before age 12, but they're there already after age 12. So therefore, they're considered a simon. Ben Yud Gimel Shana V'yem Echad, and if they develop the Shtei Cyrus after he's 13 or older, Divrei Hakol Simon, then everybody agrees that it's a simon. And you have similarly as far as girls, slightly different ages. In fact, Rashi refers to the Gemara in Nida there, points out on the face of it, what are you doing between 12 and 13? First the Braisa had mentioned up to age 12, and then it skips to 13. What happened between 12 and 13? And the Gemara discusses over there, it means that the Gemara gives there several answers over there, whether we're talking about a boy or a girl, or are we talking about both, etc. The point is, in other words, that there's a certain age below. Now, the halacha, by the way, is like the chachamim. So any hairs that develop before 13 for a boy or before 12 for a girl are not considered simone gadlos, even if those same hairs still exist after that. But derech klal, for most purposes in halacha, we usually say we have what's called chazaka de Rava, that Rava says there's a chazaka, that a boy or a girl of the appropriate age has developed Shtei Cyrus at the appropriate time, and therefore we're considered a god. Therefore they're considered a gadol, and we don't actually have to check. There are certain rare cases, for example, chalitza, where you do have to physically check. But even then, if we find hair there after 13, then generally we go with the assumption that it developed only after 13 or 12 for a girl, and not that it developed earlier and is still there now. Anyway, the point is that Reb Safra is saying, so when you buy an Oma HaEvriya, you know at least there's a certain amount of time before which you don't have to worry about Shtei Cyrus. Say for example, the father sells his daughter as an Oma HaEvriya when she's five, or let's say for example when she's eight. So let's say she's eight. So you know it's 4 years until she's 12. So therefore, you know during those 4 years, Shtei Cyrus are not going to be an issue. So therefore, in that sense, it's similar to Shei Shonim or Yovel or whatever, where you know there's a certain defined time when it's going to happen. So fine, you don't know. She may reach 12 and not develop Shei Cyrus yet, but you know at least it's not going to happen before 12. So there, on the other hand, Misas Av could happen any time. So therefore, you could argue that would be a reason for the Mishnah to not mention it, even if, like Rish Lakish is saying, it does work. Okay. So the Gemara says, Masiv Rav Sheshes. So Rav Sheshes says, fine, I have another contradiction against Rish Lakish. A Braisa says, Rav Shimon Omer, Arba'a Ma'anikim Lahem. There are four cases where an Eved Ivri or Omer HaEvri goes free and you give them Ha'anaka, you give them the presents that we're going to learn in the next couple of blot that you give them when they go free that it talks about in Parshas Re'eh. Which Rashi points out, we're going to have a machlokas further on. There are opinions that say that if the Eved Ivri runs away, then he doesn't get a Hanukkah. And there's also an opinion that says, and then there's a machlokas about what happens if he goes out with Gira and Kesef. What happens if he pays for his freedom? Does he get Hanukkah? We're going to have a machlokas about this later on. So Rav Shimon wants to give us a simon to exclude both of them. So altogether, he says there are only four ways, even though there are six ways altogether in which an Eved or Omer could go free. Nevertheless, two of them don't get Hanukkah, namely, Rav Shimon is saying if they run away or if they buy their freedom with money. So the four of them are Shloisha Be'isha or Shloisha Be'isha. Among those four, three of them can apply to a man, and three of them can apply to and three can apply to a woman. In other words, there's one that applies only to a man and not a woman, and vice versa. And the iyat yocholoyma arba echad mehem. It's impossible to have all four of them by either one, by a man or a woman. Lafisha in simonim beish, because when it comes to a man, simonim don't make a difference. The pashtus is already sold after he has simonim, but even if not, then simonim don't make him go free. The in ritzia beisha, and on the other hand, a woman you never pee or suil. The four ways that we're talking about are. The four ways at this point we're assuming are 6 years, yovel, nirtza, where nirtza goes free when the adin dies, and simonim. So therefore, three of them, 6 years, yovel and misas adin, apply to the eved, and yovel, nirtza, and 6 years, yovel and nirtza will apply to a man. To a woman, there'll be 6 years yovel and simonim, because by her there's no nirtza. So v'im isa. Now, if what Rish Lakish is saying is valid, and there's another way for an omoria nisni nami misis av, then it should also list the death of the father. V'chitema hochinami tana v'shayer. You're going to answer like you tried to before that maybe the Tana is not listing all the possibilities. Can't be v'ha abar katani. He says four. And then he says there can only be four. There can never be four different ones by one person, because you only have three that apply to a man, and among the four, a different group of three that apply to the woman. Now Tosfos explains the question is not so much the fact that Reb Shimon is saying number four. Even when a Tana says a number, you can still say there are more things that he left out. The point is rather that Reb Shimon is stressing that there's no way to ever have four ways of getting Hanukkah for an Eved Ivri, or four ways to get Hanukkah for an Omer Hevriya, based on what Rish Lakish is saying, there would be four ways for an Omer Hevriya. 6 years, Yovel, 6 years, Yovel, Simonim, or Misasa'ad. So therefore, but if it does, so if he doesn't say that, then that would imply that that Misasa'ad doesn't work. And chitema tana davash yesh lekitzba katani v'davash ein lekitzba lekatani. You're going to answer like we tried to answer before, that the tana is only listing things that have a certain defined schedule to them. What about the simonim de'ein lam kitzba? What about simonim? We said there's no fixed time v'katani, and yet it lists them. V'chitema hochanami k'dir Rav Safra. You're going to answer like Rav Safra that at least you have a minimum amount of time that has to pass before they come, because you can calculate from when the Omer Hevriya is sold until her bas mitzvah, and you know at least you have that amount of time. What about Mrs. Odin getting lam kitzva? What about the Odin dying? There's no particular scheduled time for that either. V'katani, and yet Reb Shimon lists that. So therefore, we see Reb Shimon in his braise is listing even things that have no scheduled time. So therefore, according to Rish Lakish, he should also be mentioning Mrs. Ab, even though it has no scheduled time. So doesn't that seem to be then not like Rish Lakish? So Ve'ela Arba Mainu. So then in that case, we have to figure out what are the four ways that Reb Shimon is talking about. Shonim v'yovel v'yovel sharitzia v'amay ria v'simanim. So the four that Reb Shimon is talking about must be the regular 6 years yovel for anybody, yovel specifically for an eved whose ear was pierced, and an amay ria going out with simanim. So the answer actually is, so the Gemara is actually answering that no, Reb Shimon is not in fact including Mrs. Odin. You're thinking to begin with that Rish Lakish is that Reb Shimon and the Braisa, that his list of four includes Mrs. Odin. You're assuming to start with that you're talking about 6 years yovel, and you're talking about 6 years yovel, the death of the Odin, which is when a nirtza goes free, and simonim of Omer Hevriya. Now we're saying no. Instead of Mrs. Odin, you're including yovel for a nirtza. So the Shimon is not listing Mrs. Odin at all. So in that case, then fine, that still works with Rish Lakish's opinion. He's not mentioning Mrs. Odin because not scheduled. Therefore, he's not mentioning Mrs. Av because not scheduled either. But maybe in fact, Reb Shimon would agree that Mrs. Av should go free. Okay, the Gemara says, fine, but I have a different problem with Rish Lakish. Masiv Rabbanam, the Elu Ma'anikim Lahem, the following Avodim get Hanukkah, get these severance gifts when they go free. Hayotze B'Shanim, when he goes free after 6 years, over Yovel, when he goes free in Yovel, over Misasa Odin, or when he goes free because the Odin dies, and you have, in other words, even though he's dead, his Yoshim are still required to do it. In fact, the Ksois learns, not even, we talked about the other day, the question of whether Shibud or Daraisa, the concept of Shibud, does it apply to Daraisa or not? Even if we say that not, here it's a special choiv that the Torah puts on the Yoshim as well. Anyway, the Omer Hevriya with Simonim, and the Omer Hevriya goes free with Simonim. Now, the Im Issa Nisni Nami Misa Sa'av, if you're saying like with Shlokish, then you should also include Misa Sa'av. Here it mentions Misa Sa'odin, so you can't say that he's only listing scheduled things. But Chitema Tonev Shire, you're going to say maybe the Tana is leaving out some things. Again, you can't, because Vaha Elu Kotoni, the Braise is saying these, implying there's no other ways. Vachitema Dovash Yesh the Kitzba Kotoni, Dovash and the Kitzba Le Kotoni. You're going to say he's only listing scheduled things, while Simonim the Enlam Kitzba Kotoni, yet Simonim have no schedule, and yet he mentions them. Vachitema Hochinami Kidder of Safra. Again, you're going to try to explain like Rav Safra that says at least you have a minimum number of years before they come, but you can miss a Sa'odin. But you have the Misa Sa'odin where it does mention that, even though it's not scheduled and you never know when it could happen. So now in this Braisa, and this Braisa is actually the first half of the Braisa that we brought before with Rav Shimon. So therefore, from this half of the Braisa, it's very clear that Misa Sa'odin works, but Misa Sa'av does not. Tiyufta did Rish Lakish. So therefore, we have a contradiction on Rish Lakish. And the Gemara says, you're right, Tiyufta, it is a contradiction to Rish Lakish, and therefore Misa Sa'av doesn't work. An interesting point, by the way, that Mephoshim make is, if this is the first half of the Braisa that we had from before, then why didn't the Gemara ask from that first? Why did Rav Sheshes ask only from the end of the Braisa? And now we have Rav Amram bringing only the beginning of the Braisa, which is where we slog up Rish Lakish. And there's a couple of answers, including that maybe, in fact, in the yeshiva, maybe Rav Amram brought up the first part of the Braisa first and then slogged up Rish Lakish from that. Later on, Rav Sheshes pointed out that on the face of it, the second half of it contradicts to me also. And then when Rav Ashi and Ravina came to arrange the Gemara as we have it, then they put Rav Sheshes as first, because the Gemara will often do that. The Gemara would rather give the final refutation at the end and then go through the other possibilities before that. So when they edited the Gemara, they may have put these out of order. Anyway. So the Gemara asked, "Vahar Rish Lakish Kavachomer Omar? Didn't Rish Lakish prove his point from a Kavachomer? So you're going to tell me, fine, we're slugging him up based on a Braisa, but why Taka doesn't the Tana of that Braisa learn that same Kavachomer as well and say that Misa Sa'av should work for her to go free?" And the answer is, the Gemara says, "Kavachomer Prichim, because the Kavachomer is a weak Kavachomer, you can slug it up. Mishum de'ikal mifrach, you can slug it up and you can say, Malas Simonin Shneshtana Haguf. You know why Simonim are powerful enough to get her out of the Rishus of the Odin is because the body changed. She was a Ketana, now she became a Naira. It's like a different body. So that you can argue, therefore, the father could say, I sold you my daughter as a Ketana. Now she's a Naira, it's a different status, and therefore she has to go free. Now, Tosfos points out that's not going to be enough to get her out of the Rishus of her father, because the fact is her father regardless what age she is. Fine, eventually she becomes a Begeris, she's going to go free. But the point is, in other words, at least as far as fatherhood, you can say his fatherhood doesn't expire just because she became a Naira, but mastership is different. It's like a different goof. He bought one goof and now it became a different goof. So term of Mrs. Av Shekhemla Nishtana Aguf, how are you comparing that to Mrs. Av, where her body didn't change? She's still the same Katana that she was. So therefore that slugs up Rish Lakish's Kavachomer. And now even if it had just been for slugging up his Kavachomer, we still wouldn't have necessarily said the halacha is not like him. But now that we slugged him up from a Braisa, then that's it. The halacha is not like him, and Mrs. Av doesn't flee. Okay. The Gemara continues. Toni Choda Enek Eved Ivri La'atzmai. Now you have one braisa that says that the Hanukkah, the gifts that you give to the Eved Ivri or the Omer Hevriya when they go free, one braisa says that the Enek go of the Eved Ivri goes to himself, the Enek Omer Hivri La'atzma, and similarly that for an Omer Hivri goes to herself, the Tanya Idach Enek Omer Hivri Amitziyasa Lavia. Another Braisa says that not only her Hanukkah, but also anything she finds belongs to her father, the Emer Rabba El Schar Batola Bovan. If during the time that she was working in, as an Omer Hivri, she finds something, then her father still gets to keep it, the same as he would if she wasn't an Omer Hivri. All her master has is schar batala. In other words, for example, that she took off time for when she found this mitzia. So necessarily she took some time off her regular work to find this mitzia. So the adin can be compensated for that, but he doesn't get the actual mitzia itself. You can have a case, let's say, for example, where her time is very valuable. But he's still only getting schar batola. He's only saying he's only just getting minimum wage for the amount of time that she found that mitzvah. Now, if we have these two brises, my lab hoda nafka b'simonim b'hoda nafka la mitzvah sa'av. Now, let's say maybe we haven't completely schlugged up the shlokish. Maybe after all, this brisa supports. Maybe after all, one of these brises supports him. Maybe the one brisa is talking about where she's eventually going free with Simonim. So she's still a Katana. And therefore, now when she's going free with Simonim, so she's still a Naira, she's still under her father's Rishus. And therefore, the father gets the Hanukkah. Bahad the Nafkalab Mrs. Av, whereas the first Brisa that says she keeps it for herself would be when the father dies. So in that case, then at least we find a Brisa that says she goes free when her father dies. And the answer is like, not necessarily. In both cases, in the Braisa can be talking about where she goes free because of Simonim. One Braisa is talking about where the father is still alive. The other is talking about after he passed away. So the first Braisa that says that she keeps it for herself is where the father passed away. And then it doesn't go to her brothers. The second Braisa that says that her father gets it is when her father is alive. So the Gemara says, "Bishlema enek omah hivri la'atzma." Now, why does the Braisa need to say this anyway? I understand what the chidush is, that the omah hivriya's hanukkah she keeps for herself. The point is, lama'uti achin, it comes to exclude, you shouldn't think her brothers get it. D'tanya, as in fact we learn in a Braisa, we talked about this on Omer Aleph, when it says, "V'isnachaltem oisam livnechem acharechem," the pasuk says you should bequeath them, meaning avodim knanim, to your children after you, and the word oisam means livnechem. Oisam livnechem means only them, avodim knanim, do you bequeath to your children. V'loy b'neisechem livnechem, you don't bequeath your daughters to your sons. So from that we learn what we said on Amar Aleph, for example, that when the father dies, the maisia deha don't go to her brothers, because if they did, then that would amount to that the father is almost like bequeathing his rights and his daughters to his sons, and you don't do that. So therefore, the Braisa, which is telling us that she keeps her Hanukkah, is telling us that too doesn't go to her brothers, she keeps it herself. Ela enek Eved Ivri la'atzmei, but you're saying the Hanukkah of an Eved Ivri goes to himself. Pshita, isn't that obvious? Ela l'man, who else is it going to go to if not to him? So Omer Rabbi Yosef, Yud Kras Kochazina Hocha. Rabbi Yosef says, I see over here a Yud Kras. Rashi explains, Yud is a small letter, it's the smallest letter of the alphabet. Kros means a big city. So like the Yud has been made into a big city, which is a way of figure of speech, meaning here the Tanner just put in extra words without needing to. There are other Rishonim who explain, rather, that Yud Kros is the name of a city in Eretz Yisrael. And particularly, there's an explanation about Shem Chacham, that's the name of a Talmud Chacham. And in particular, the Mefoshim point out, there's a Gemara in Tainis that mentions someone named Rabbi Yossi, the Min Yurkros, who was known to be a very harsh person. And therefore, Rabbi Yossi is saying, the same way as that kind of person is difficult to get along with, the Gemara tells over there, the same way this question is a very difficult one to resolve, why the Tana would bother mentioning this when it's not necessary. There's a fascinating explanation from Lev Yitzchak, the Rebbe's father, where he says, Al-Pi Kabbalah, he says that Rabbi Yosef over here is reaching back to the original Yosef, the Shevet. We have. He was an Eved for a while. And then what happened? We know that Hashem gave him a letter of his name, the letter Hey. And with that, he was able to learn all the 70 languages. So Rabbi Yosef is saying, is hinting at the idea, the Yud has like blown up into a Hey. The Yud has become a big thing, the Hey, which then was given to Yosef as his Hanukkah, as his severance gift from his slavery. And with that, he became the great, and with that, he became the great Prime Minister Yosef. So Reb Yosef over here is hinting at his namesake, at what happened with him, at the spiritual Hanukkah that he got. Anyway, I saw also an interesting word from the Yid HaKodesh of Prishiska, that he says it's also hinting at the fact that it's also hinting at the fact that the normally you have to give tzedakah even from small amounts of money, but here we're saying the Hanukkah, because he's poor, he's getting this Hanukkah as an eved ivri, he's not required to give tzedakah from it, and he explains how the word yud keres hint at that point, like from the yud, the yud becomes a city again. You don't actually have to give tzedakah from it. Anyway, so that's Rabbi Yosef. Abaya Omahochi Om Rav Sheshes Homani Tutoi. Rav Sheshes said you should know that this braisa is according to Tutoi, which is the name of a chacham, the Tanya Tutoi Omer Loi V'Loi L'Bal Choyvei. As we learned a couple of days ago, that he learned. Now, when it says you give the Hanukkah loy, it means not to his Baal Chayv, meaning we said, even though normally you have Shibuda de Rav Nosson, you have the case where Reuven owes Shimon money and Shimon owes Levi money, we take the money from Reuven and give it directly to Yehuda. Here we don't do that. Even if the Eved Ivri owes somebody else money, we do not take away the Hanukkah from him and give it to his Baal Chayv. Rather, he gets to keep it himself. We talked about the other day that we had the Chachamim and Rabbi Lazar argued on that point. Rabbi Lazar held like Tutori over here that you don't give it to the Baal Chayv. The Chachamim held not like that. And we had a discussion over there from Tosfos. What does that mean? In the end, is the halacha like Rabbi Nosson or not? And we said one possibility, which Tosfos and some other Rishonim bring up, is maybe the halacha is like Rabbi Nosson by most kinds of chovis, but not when it comes to Hanukkah. There we would say this exception and say that we don't give it to his Baal Chayv. And the point is, that's why Abaya says, that's why the Braisa needs to mention Enek Eved Ivri La'atzmai, that because Tutoi is telling us that you should know, it means you don't give it to his Baal Chayv, even if he owes somebody else money. Okay, so we'll continue tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, talking about more about these Dinim of Hanukkah, Be'ez Hashem.